pretty much frustrated the Lebanese government, the army. Now it's really unclear what measures they're going to take. Hezbollah has been very quiet on that front since the ceasefire. They've been focusing a lot on commemorating Hassan Nasrallah, their leader, who was killed by an Israeli airstrike back in September, doing some community work and that sort of thing. We do know the army has been very public about these violations, particularly ones that have struck military personnel, and that they say they have complained, and the Lebanese government is doing the same, apparently. This is a really big test for the new monitoring framework for this ceasefire, which is headed by the United States, and is supposed to bring life back into this UN Security Council resolution from back in 2006, which they're trying to have implemented right now. It's really unclear what the Lebanese government's going to do beyond that, whether they're trying to put the trust into the system and hope that that Washington asked the Israelis to maybe, you know, to stop these overflights and these attacks. It's really unclear. But over the past few days, these issues are still, you know, continuing. And it has brought some doubt among some people in Lebanon about whether this ceasefire can
Kareem,
hold.
Kareem, we're going to have to leave it the there. Israelis we hope to do a post-show interview with you. Kareem Shahayeb is the Beirut-based journalist reporting on Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq for the Associated Press. A belated birthday to Dina Guzder. I'm Amy Goodman.
KBOO 90.7 FM. If you're able, please go to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution in support of the critical work of community radio. Thank you.
KBOO's 2024 Catalog of Connections is hot off the presses. To get your copy featuring your favorite programs, letters from the board, and so much more, contact our membership director by calling 971-801-1381. That's 971-801-1381, or by emailing membership@kboo.org. We can't wait to connect with you.
Hey, good morning. You're listening to the More Talk Radio Show here on your community radio station, KBOO FM, 90.7 on the FM dials in Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River, 104.3 FM Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I'm your host. And today is the 2nd of December. And before we get into the important part of our program, let me just remind you, because it's all important, that I urge you not to forget that we are in the middle of KBOO's Catalog of Connection year-end campaign, focusing on the gift of community-given media. So important. To support, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO 244321 to become a monthly sustaining member today. And help us reach our fundraising goal of $75,000. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your support. And thank you all for making this a community-driven media source, which is so important in these times. And so on this second day of December, and we're in the last month of the year 2024, and what a year it has been. I saw a couple of memes recently about what does it mean to be living in a fascist time. No, this isn't Italy in the 1930s or Germany in the 1930s or South Africa in the 1980s. It is the United States in the 21st century. And as we discover or see evidence of the Trump policies unfolding, comes into focus how different, that's a way to say it, our times will be moving forward in the months and years ahead. There seems to be a resistance, a resentment, almost a sense of we will go forward and despite you, I get, and sense of defiance, maybe that's the word I'm looking for, rather than an attempt to come together and finding common ground. So these are are dangerous times. And as we've shared in recent weeks, certainly since the elections, we've been trying to highlight times of resistance, movements which inspire, offer insights on how we may confront this regime that is about to take over the federal government. And what does that mean for all of us? How may it be confronted, and how may it be defeated? Now, all of you are wise individuals and wise communities. So as we move forward, I'm interested in hearing from you, what are those sources of inspirations, those times of resistance, those movements, those books, those movies, those reflections you have that offered you insight, inspiration, ways to move forward? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. What are ways you are finding to move forward in this era as we discover the full range of the incoming federal administration's policies and how it will impact individuals? As we are looking forward and making plans on how to resist, how to offer help to communities that are being threatened, that are marginalized, what are things that you are doing to support your community? Things that makes a difference in ways in which people survive. Not necessarily related to this. Today is the 2nd of December, and yesterday, December 1st, was the day that is recognized throughout the world as World AIDS Day. And for many decades now, we have been in the midst of an epidemic of the HIV/AIDS epidemic. And it may be difficult to understand what it was like in the 80s and 90s and in the early part of this century, where, speaking of the incoming federal administration, where our previous administration offered little help or direction, or for years did not even say the words HIV or AIDS. And so in these troubling times, just reflecting on the AIDS epidemic, but also not only looking back for the past 40 years, but also trying to recognize that many of us have survived the AIDS epidemic, lived through the COVID pandemic, and we are battled strong, battled tough. What are the lessons we've learned from surviving those pandemics, those epidemics? What creates thriving community in difficult times when there seems to be no hope? These are some thoughts we have, but let's hear what you have to say. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. In these fascist times, what do you say? Let's go to James. Good morning.
Good morning, Cecil. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, how are you, and what do you have to say this morning?
Well, I want to say that fascism is a form of socialism. America became fascist in 1913 when progressives established the central bank and the progressive income tax.
Oh, I was waiting for you to say the income tax. I knew that was coming. Okay. Okay, say more. Why? And so for the last 110 years, the United States has been a fascist?
Yes.
And before that, everything was fine?
Before that, the people owned the means of production through the people's power to tax and regulate industry.
Okay. Which people? Women who could not vote? Indigenous people who were not citizens? Or those who were formerly enslaved?
Rights come from the creator. They do not come from the state. So what you're saying is that rights come from the state. So you
I'm having a conversation. I'm trying to get some information from you. So I'm not arguing. I'm just asking. Before 1913, you said that things were better. And I'm saying for whom and who made those decisions.
I said that America became a fascist country in 1913 when progressives established the central bank. I didn't say it was better.
Okay, so I asked you, and before 1913, how were things? Hello?
Well, it's kind of a mixed bag. After the Civil War, I mean, let's go to the voting. Let's go to the voting thing. Women rights come from the creator. So women had the right to vote. There was nothing in the Constitution that prevented women from having the right to vote.
There wasn't anything preventing women's the right to vote, except it was the law of the land. It was in the Constitution.
That's not true. Because
in 1920. Just explain, before 1920, before the amendment given women the right to vote, you said women had a right to vote. Certainly in some states they had a right to vote, but certainly not federally. Thank you for calling, James. There's a couple of other callers on, and we'll continue our conversation about what happened with the United States after 1913 at another time. I do appreciate your calling and for the way in which you advocate your position. Thank you so much. And we will go to Lou.
Morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Lou. How are you?
I'm hopeful and busy organizing with Portland Grey Panthers.
Hey, okay, tell us.
But I figured that I should, since you're first caller today, I don't know if that was a repeat caller. I hadn't heard that person before, but it sounded like, without knowing specifically if that was a Trump person, mushing together words that have nothing to do and, in fact, are the opposite of each other. Like, to start with, I think that person said, fascism and socialism were the same thing,
yes.
And historically they're the opposite, exactly.
Yes.
Although I've sort of heard Trump say that too, so I think there's a whole thing about conflating and making language and or cabinet nominees in Trump's case. Say it's one thing when, in fact, exactly the opposite.
Sure.
So yeah. I don't know if you've been following the cabinet nominees so far.
Well, they... tell me something. What's your insight, Lou, about this this collection of
fascists?
I don't know. Yes. Well, you said you're hopeful, so...
Yeah, certainly capitalists. Well, I would say hopeful because in Oregon, for example, which doesn't necessarily address the cabinet level, there's lots of progressive people that got elected both to city council. Mm-hmm. Some of us are hopeful about Keith Wilson, who's talked probably five times with Portland Grey Panthers. We like Keith, although some of us rank Carmen Rubio first. There's also lots of good developments in Oregon in terms of being hopeful in other races. Shannon Singleton and Megan Moyer both defeated by 20 points. The business real estate supported candidate Sam Adams, a controversial former mayor, and Vadim Mazursky aligned with Rene Gonzalez. And perhaps the most hopeful thing in the November election in Portland was Rene Gonzalez totally lost. Keith Wilson won by 60%. We're hopeful that he'll make progress with his ambitious housing proposal. Carmen Rubio, I believe, came in second, but other people could correct that if that's wrong. And city council, we think, although it has some moderate or conservative members elected, with ranked choice voting, there are now 12 people. So District 1 in East County is represented finally. Angelita Murillo and Tiffany Lane won in District 3. Mitch Green won downtown District 1, traditionally the more affluent district. Did you follow some of I'm pretty sure you did, some of the local stuff.
Yes, yes. So I think I thank you for pointing us in the direction about what's happening locally, and because it says to me that by focusing on local, you can have a direct impact, and certainly from what I understand, a lot of the work, and you can expand, a lot of the work the Grey Panthers are doing is meeting with individuals and trying to understand their positions, and you tell me.
Well, yeah, I mean, you and I have known each other off and on for a long time, but we've done several different things. So there's the Walmart boycott against gun violence, which Keith Wilson's endorsed. We just sent in a thing to the Tribune that looks like they printed it online already about that, but we're hoping it'll get another hard copy on Wednesday. But during election years, I mentioned before that we've had like 80 of the city council candidates come and talk to us. There are over 100, and the seven main Portland mayor candidates. The most controversial speaker we've had was Betsy Johnson, who you probably remember ran an independent campaign for governor after being a lifelong Democrat against Tina Kotek. And one of the things that most activist groups on the left keep track of is where the donation's coming from. So you probably do remember. In that case, Phil Knight with Nike, who tends to support conservative candidates in Oregon, donated first about $2 million to Betsy Johnson against Tina Kotek, and Tina became governor, which is good. She's a woman governor, she's LGBTQ+, she's a union supporter, etc. But Betsy Johnson numbers kept going down as it got as an independent candidate. Mm-hmm. So then Phil Knight reportedly donated about $2 million to Christine Drazen, who is the Republican. It was three women running against each other. Right. Thought to be somewhat competitive, but Tina wound up winning against the money that came in from Phil Knight. I was also going to say, you can interrupt, of course, if you have more callers, that on the cabinet nominees, there's an ONA organizer. She's an RN, Terry Mills. And she checked in with us. She just had a good letter in the Oregonian 2 days ago about why it's important now in December for grassroots groups locally, city after city, state after state, to oppose some of Trump's cabinet nominees.
Okay.
Is that enough, or do you want me to
keep No. I want you to continue. I misunderstood you when you began this stream, when you were talking about that. I thought you were saying that this was a person who was nominated to be in the cabinet. No.
Which one?
Oh, you said the ONA.
Oh, no. Terry Mills is someone who just had a letter to the Oregonian saying that it's important for people to oppose the cabinet. Her main concern, I think there's lots of objectionable, almost all of them, cabinet nominees per se, but her main concern is RFK Jr. And you were talking, I think, about epidemics and pandemics.
Yes.
Bobby Kennedy Jr. has been disowned by the Kennedy family. I heard RFK Jr. talk in person twice at Portland State 20 years ago, and he was against vaccines then. So he apparently, Trump says, he wants RFK Jr. to be overseeing Health and Human Services, and this would include, apparently, maybe if these people get through, Dr. Oz in charge of Medicare or dismantling. So this whole panorama, I think the idea for HOPE locally is to, like, we have some contacts in Indiana, Arizona, oddly, maybe, but to have more of a national coalition based on local resistance by not just the Democrats, but people who might not have voted at all because they were told, apparently, with a lot of advertising, Elon Musk put in, apparently, $50 million, that there are all these problems with the Democrats, specifically having a black woman president.
Well, so, that's a lot to.
Well, you were asking.
I think you're somewhat inspiring because you keep on coming back to giving hope, and I think in terms of things we can do, a way we can make a difference, maybe acting locally is where we begin.
Well, and just that there's a ricochet effect that locally. Building coalitions. Some of us have worked on boycotts in particular, where we've had like 92 groups in 14 Western states endorse one of the boycotts.
Yes.
So we think boycotts and ballots are both helpful. You probably have other callers, so I should let you go. But thanks for talking to me.
Okay, well, thank
you
so much, Lou.
Bye.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We just finished a short conversation with Lou, who was sharing, this conversation not so joyful, but Lou reminded us that there is hope, and Lou reminded us that there is hope by focusing on the local. They had an opportunity to share with us about local campaigns and candidates and local elections and how that was encouraging. So perhaps looking at the national scene, if that gives you some reason to say, oh my gosh, where are we headed? Perhaps if we look at local scenes, we can see where we can take action and where we can make a difference. What are your thoughts? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And as we talk and share with one another about that, I also, you know, reflected a little bit about the World AIDS Day and the COVID pandemic, and what are lessons about surviving or even thriving in difficult times when there seems to be no hope. Where are those sources of inspiration? Or where do you find people who thrive in the midst of so much despair? And if you did not have enough to think about, what came not so much, and it's about, I like to say, it's a two-tier justice system. Now, after weeks of saying that he would not pardon their son, the president, Biden, pardoned his son because he could, I imagine. But this certainly seems to me a reason to say there seems to be a two-tier justice system, as if anyone should be surprised. You know, we look at the apparent dropping of the federal cases against Mr. Trump, the very slow rate in which he was being prosecuted. Trials were being delayed, and I suppose if you have enough money, you can afford that justice system. And so Biden's pardoning of his son, it reveals access, for me, it reveals access to power and influence. It's not so much the case against Hunter Biden is comparable to the felony cases against Trump. It's not that you measure one against the other, but I think in both cases, and with Mr. Trump, in terms of the battery of lawyers he had and the way to slow down the system for their benefit and for Mr. Biden and for his son in particular, it reveals access to power and influence that working people, you and I, do not have. You probably get a traffic ticket tomorrow for speeding or going through a red light, and not many of us can have access to people of influence or power. So this certainly continue to be a two-tier justice system. But I am not surprised. What are your thoughts? And maybe what are things that are hopeful? Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. Our two-tier justice system. We're living in fascist time. But what are movements of resistance, movements which inspire or insight that may offer you way in which to defeat that? We had a couple of callers earlier. Initial caller was sharing their concern about how the United States, for about a century, and he said that since the beginning of the central banking system, has been living in a fascist state. And our second caller was sharing some of his thoughts, not only about the national scene, but hopefully why he is hopeful on the local scene. What are your thoughts? Let's go to our next caller. Yeah. Okay, we'll go to Tangent. Tangent, how are you today?
Really good, thank you. I would hang all of this upcoming mess on one, I don't know if man is the correct word, person's shoulders. Judge Marchand, is it pronounced?
In New York. Oh, okay.
First he what? He postpones the supposed sentencing.
Right.
To what? After the election. And now, well, there's just no point. Now, when have you ever found a judge, first of all, that would take, what, 2 or 3 months to sentence someone?
This
isn't difficult. They do it all the time. Bam, bam, bam.
That's what I said. Yeah, you know, justice system, I like this one, the one that Trump and Biden has. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I wonder how much he got paid off. I really think that they don't want to put him. And let me get into this, because I mentioned that belief is more, that people believe in things they don't know. Okay, but it gets extended. So that, here we go. Belief is more powerful than truth. I didn't say it was more correct. I didn't say, okay, I'm saying it's more powerful. Because if a scientist or some, knowledgeable person wants to explain something to you and you don't agree, he won't want to kill you. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
The people that believe in war, first of all, look at that. People, kids, believe in war, and they go, okay, but they don't know it. And yeah. Then once they've been, they just keep defending it forever. I'm telling you, the military is scared to death of peace.
All right. Yes. Hey, thank you.
What would they do if they couldn't scare us all into another hoobaloo?
That's the question. Hey, thank you so much, Tangent. And I hope they don't scare you. Continue to...
and keep on thinking free. Oh, I did that for Paul Rowland a few weeks ago. He loved it. You want me to do it? Some Moody Blues intro?
Not right now. We have another caller right behind.
Well, everybody...
Thank you so much. And you're listening to More Talk Radio or... your community radio station. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. In these times, what gives you hope? Janet, do you have a word of inspiration for us?
Keep it lit. The hopeful thing is that we can actually express ourselves, and it's really a rare, important thing to have some kind of a vehicle to open our minds and emancipate our minds. And then what I'd like to share is a little bit of the a few different things. Is in acting, there's a thing called MAL for recognizing that we might have a big volcano building up inside of us, but that we can pick the two things that we want to present and then kind of hold back with the rest of it, keep it down a notch.
Yes.
So I'm thinking about what are the two things I would like to really offer up this morning. One of them is probably, I think we can learn a lot from, I have actually an appointment to meet with a new social worker person that came up the mountain here where I'm living, where there was a murder and somebody I knew for over 10 years, and people are pretty upset about 40 dozen things. But this new person on the mountain comes from the Lakota tradition, and I don't know if you know, there's a show on KABU about the sacred ghost horse tradition. But I think indigenous traditions in healing are huge. People would call that somatic archaeology or whatever. Like in Hawaii, they say Ho'oponopono, and people would think kind of a new agey thing, just say, I'm sorry, I love you, forgive me. But if you go way back to what actually it was kind of a village thing in a culture of fishing where the fish gets caught in the net. And so the net is the whole contextual situation that's going on, why Paulo Freire was teaching liberation theology about not just learning how to say uncle and say the right things to schmooze your way to the top and have such a hugely borderline personality population of people that have all bounded rationality that can't think to the bottom underside of something is really rotten, and then the miasma is reaching up to the heavens right now. So the hopeful thing I would be thinking is the recognition that people are talking about the age of Aquarius. And then there was a new moon, and Pluto's busting out, and somehow we're going to get through this horrendous traffic of up the mountain here, misogyny, where this this woman was murdered, and everybody's up and going. So, what are your thoughts on that ghost horse thing that KABU does?
I'm not familiar with it. So I'll pass. Hey, thank you, Janet. You know, one thing that among the things you shared with us that got me thinking is to move beyond what we see right here in front of us, and to learn from. And you said, you know, there's a tendency, you know, occasionally someone say, "Oh, I found this new thing," and because we like to commercialize things and take things over, become new agey or something like this, what I gaining from you is to go back to see the wisdom from the ancients, from indigenous cultures, from our own backgrounds. There's something
the other,
there. Go ahead.
One other little thing I'd like to add is when I had a teacher class for Linfield down in Coos Bay about people who might want to go into special education, because I worked with kids that had, you know, serious emotional anger problems, is to recognize what our own triggers are so that we can continue finding some way to have some kind of a discourse with people, understanding that, like, in writing and sort of thing, that there's surface tension, so character development is evolving from surface tension, so we could have some differences and there could be some rough little edges to figure out how we can recognize what's in ourselves that we can bring forth some kind of positive harmonizing influence in situations like stable instability. Kind of let's all take it down a notch, that the humanity can be the thing that emerges.
Thank you
so much. Really appreciate your forum.
I appreciate your thoughts and sharing with us. And among the last things you said, I think I'm just going to sit with it. It's recognizing our own triggers. Thank you so much. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187 if you would like to give us a call and participate in our conversation. Our last caller, Janet, began by reminding us to open our mind and emancipate our minds, reminding me of the Bob Marley song. But what are the things that we gain, and recognizing what are those things that triggers us? Helpful information. Previous caller, Tangent, was reflecting on our two-tier justice system, commenting on my observation that Mr. Trump and Mr. Biden both have access to power and influence, and that impact the way the justice system have on their lives. Unlike the how black and brown people and working class people face the justice system, which is not our friend. But why don't you give us a call and give us your thoughts? Our numbers are 503-231-8187. I said earlier, recognizing that yesterday, December 1st, was World AIDS Day, and some reflection on what does that mean for all of us, having experienced one epidemic and lived through another. What does that mean? What does experiencing that trauma, how does it impact us? And again, for one other information, I'll share that the information piece right now to keep you waiting, because we have an interesting caller right now. Santiago. Good morning, Santiago.
Good morning. How are you, Cecil?
I am okay. How are you this morning?
I am doing all right.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Share with me some wisdom.
Well, I mean, being surprised that America is two-tiered, I feel like a lot of what we experienced in this past election is a privileged group of people, namely like the white liberal class, who are finally experiencing the truth and the horror of being a marginalized person in this country. Yeah, I think the second Trump presidency has torn the wool from the eyes of people who just kind of like voted to preserve the brunch hour, and now they're really seeing that this is actually like things are not good, and they don't have any way to like really come to terms with it, because they see things through an idyllic lens rather than a materialist lens.
That's
the biggest thing. The American system, for those that it works for, they really don't question. I mean, even for people who doesn't work for, they teach you not to question. And,
yes.
Without any sort of framework for challenging the status quo, it's like you keep coming back to electoralism or, we need more awareness campaigns, when we don't need more awareness. We need people to start acting on the things that they see.
Okay.
Yeah.
You drop a couple of pearls of wisdom there, right there.
Yeah. The thing that gives me hope the most is just realizing that, the most beautiful art, the most beautiful music, the music that I love and that I play was created in the times of the most dire strife.
Yes.
I mean, look at like you know, Donny Hathaway. I mean, look at the music he created when he was like, he was one wrong step away from being hung from a tree. Mm-hmm. But it didn't prevent him from creating beauty. It didn't prevent, Ray Charles or Teddy Pendergrass or so many of, or Marvin Gaye. It didn't prevent people from creating beauty. It gave people who were in the direst of strife a greater appreciation for the beauty that life has, even when it seems it's at its darkest.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. So the artists are special. The cultural preservers are even. They're special communities. Go ahead. No, you go.
Oh no, artists are special, I think, to an extent, but I think more than anything, they're the cultural barometer.
Barometer,
you know,
yeah.
You're gonna have what a lot of people call industry plants, people who are there to create music to appease the status quo or to, you know, push people in the direction of it. There's actually a really great article written a few years back, more than a few years probably, by DJ Sandman out of New York called Jailhouse Rock, and how, you know, the modern hip-hop, how the modern music industry is being owned and bought up by prison privatization firms, people who benefit from private prisons.
Wow.
And it's like, I mean, the thing that makes capitalism so insidious is that at the end of the day, everything is for sale.
And
that's what they want you to believe, that, you know, anything can be bought or sold, whether you're talking about politicians, whether you're talking about people's, you know, sense of morality. They want everything to be available in the marketplace. Whereas, people who, especially artists, prominent, like, you know, people who have socialist leanings, understand that, like, yes, you can buy and sell things, but certain things should never be bought or sold. Not just in terms of, like, people's, you know, moral compass, but in terms of, like, you know, housing or water. It's like treating things as a commodity to be traded, that everything has a monetary value, and there's some things that are above monetary value. You can't put a price on it, but they want you to because it allows you to play their game.
Hey.
Thank
you.
Just in this time, I just encourage people to go look at joining a union. Even if you're not necessarily a worker, check out the IWW, International Workers of the World. They're a really great organization that's been around for over 100 years. Please check them out. There's also the All African People's Revolutionary Party, the African People's Socialist Party. There's La Raza Unida. There's a Party for Socialism and Liberation. What we need to do is we need to start organizing outside the system. Get in touch with people who do mutual aid. There's a lot of great anarchists in Portland who do mutual aid. Get in touch with them, and we need to start building dual power, just like our revolutionary leaders taught us. You know, the only way that we put any pressure on the system to do the right thing is to organize outside of the system to create structures that can put pressure on it. You know, power concedes nothing without a demand, and even though the arc of the universe bends toward justice, it only bends towards those who are willing to pull.
All right. Hey, thank you so much, Santiago. And, you know, if you can give me the names of the two persons from those quotes, not the arc of the universe, the first one about power never conceding.
Frederick Douglass.
And the second quote was about the moral arc of the universe. It's often quoted by Martin Luther King, but he took it from Theodore Park in Parker, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
Hey, thank you so much, Santiago. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. And I'm Cecil, and let's hear what Liz has to say. Good morning.
Good morning, Cecil. Thank you for your program. I appreciate it. Your your positive tone. It's very good for me. Oh, and and also, Santiago, that was a real gift. Thank you for everything you had to say. And I just have one quick comment about the thing. I don't criticize Biden at all for an act of compassion to his own son. Mm-hmm. I mean, but that's not a thing I would ever talk about. But the war on Gaza is you know, is a thing that I am would talk about and I am against. But anyway, and the union, yay, the union. I was a member for 30 years and still support it. So anyway, thank you.
Before you go, I'm wondering if you have anything to say about the horrible situation that continues to impact people in Gaza and the lack of any movement from our government to stop that genocide.
Well, I just say that it just must stop. I mean, it will stop, but it must stop. And you know, I'm ashamed of my country for beginning that war and for murdering children, older people, all people, young people in front of our eyes. And that's all I've got to say, you know, about that right now. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Liz. You're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. We just heard from Liz, who was sharing some of their hopes and some of their inspiration, considering the times we live in. They recognized and said, well, you know, I certainly don't criticize the president for an act of compassion for their son. But also realizing the unjust justice system we live in. What are some of your thoughts? Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We've had a number of callers, and you all gave nice and wonderful insights about how you are living in the world today, in spite of everything that is being uncovered as the full, as we are discovering the full impact of the Trump presidency, and as an earlier caller suggested, I believe it was Santiago, who people just realizing, oh my gosh, is this what I voted for? Well, yes, it is. But let's go to our next caller. Joan, who has some thoughts to share with us. Good morning.
Hi, Cecil. Love your program. Everybody said wonderful things. And I have just one small comment. Mm-hmm. Now that President Biden has shown this act of compassion to his own son, which I can totally understand, why would anyone want to leave their kid in the hands of what's coming next? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, but go ahead.
Uh-huh. It's time now for him to show an act of compassion to Leonard Peltier.
Yes.
That would be a wonderful thing if he would do this last beautiful testament to his own legacy and free Leonard Peltier. And I would encourage everyone to contact the White House in whatever way they want to and to urge this to happen. We don't want to leave Leonard Peltier in the hands of what will happen next.
Yeah.
It's time for, he's been in prison for 48 years for a crime that he, it's, you know, there's evidence that he probably had a bad trial. And anyway, that's all I have to say. Thank you for letting me say it.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Joan. Thank you for expressing your opinion and reminding us that the president showed, you know, an act of kindness, of act of compassion by pardoning their son, but also should extend that act of compassion by pardoning Leonard Peltier, who has been in prison for over four decades. There's not much that the president can do in the final weeks of his term in office, but as Joan reminded us, they do have the power to pardon. And as she reminded us, in face of what's coming up next, and that just never occurred to me that way, in face of what's coming up next, yeah, that could be dangerous. And so let's see what the president can do to help make it a little easier for all of us for what's coming next. In the meantime, let's go to our next phone call and hear what Jody has to say. Good morning.
Good morning, Cecil. Thanks for taking my call. Great show. You know, the one thing that's on my mind is the genocide going on that we don't seem to really care about in this country. There's no outrage. I marched once with the Palestinian community in Portland, and I don't think we're going to stop collectively as a federal government, Biden or Trump, until all Palestinians are gone from Gaza, yeah, West Bank, and it's all Israel. And they're going to build settlements, luxury hotels in Gaza, everything like that. It's just, I don't have a lot of hope on that front. There's going to be some things that, you know, like they say, even a broken clock is right
twice a day.
And Trump will do some things like, I honestly agree with some of the tariffs on the so-called free trade. It should be fair trade, not free trade. Now, Trump his tariffs are going to be for his pals, the people that bribe him. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they'll be fair tariffs, but I do agree in principle with tariffs when it comes to, we import so much of our stuff from China. Why shouldn't there be tariffs? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, there's been a lot of good points made. I think there's hope in humanity if we take to the streets and march correctly. And how do you march correctly?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, there's direct action where you break windows. That's not the answer, because I'm a nonviolent person. But if you just, like the Women's March, I went on the Women's March after Trump got elected the first time, and everyone's wearing their little red hats, you know, the vagina hats, whatever you want to call them. And the cops were like, enjoy your march. And it was all peaceful and everything. And the cops were all almost wearing flowers in their hair. We need a little more radical marches than that. But, you know, I don't want to get tear gassed either. So, but I'll take to the streets as often as I can to protest this. And my last point I'll make, because I know we're short on time, is that when the overwhelming court of public opinion puts the pressure on our leaders, that's when things will change. But right now, people are just sitting home, working two jobs, trying to support their kids, trying to feed their kids, and they don't have time to be active. But you got to make time. You know, it's a democracy. You got to vote. You got to do the right thing for future generations. So, that's all I got to say.
Hey, that's a lot, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All righty. Bye bye.
Bye bye. And as the last caller was sharing, talking about reminding us, you know, just acknowledging that, you know, this genocide is unfolding and continues to unfold, and it seems as if we get quieter and quieter. But, you know, this is not new for those who are oppressed or marginalized. It seems as if the force of the oppressors is so strong. But yet there is hope. There is hope. As the, you know, several of our callers, our last caller reminded us to take to the streets and ways in which we can do things. And reminder, I before we go to our next caller, reminder that there is hope. We mentioned the Women's March, which occurred to me, two women that we should think of. I mentioned December 1 and World AIDS Day, but December 1 was also the anniversary of the day that Rosa Parks was arrested in 1955. So think about the rebellious life of Rosa Parks, and she was quite an activist. It wasn't, you know, this mild-mannered lady who was too tired one day. And then also think about another woman activist who anniversary of her death was a few days ago on November 29th, Dorothy Day, who was a peace activist who founded the Catholic Workers Movement, who did so much. Those are people who are inspiring and people who knew how to protest. Let's go to what will probably be our last caller this morning. Okay, we have two callers. First, Stevie Ray. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm kind of playing off of what you were just saying about the "and" in response to that last caller. One of the mentions was direct action.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to read, it's Crime Think Workers Collective from 2005, that there are times, however, when words are not enough and you must act or risk being silenced forever. This is an anti-fascist action. It's on page 37. An anti-fascist action is dangerous work. And lives depend on this kind of work. So direct action, this is a Recipes for Disaster, an anarchist cookbook. And a lot of us remember when 9/11 and the Patriot Act cloud went over the land.
Right.
And everyone kind of took a pause and redirected our direct action. And there's lots of different ways that you can do direct action. It's not just sabotage or marches and parades or whatnot. You know, it's musical instruments, it's wheat tasting, it's food not bombs, bicycle collectives. You know, this is our time to really reflect on our ancestors living and passed on, because there have been movements, right? And they're going to try to stop us, but let us take a pause and remember, right? There are way more of us than there are of them.
Thank you. Thank you.
Love
so
you
much.
Guys.
Thank you.
Right on, Kabu. On the move.
Thank you so much. And you reminded me of talking about direct action, of going back to Dorothy Day, who was this, one small woman who took on so much. And talk about direct action. In the 1950s, there was a movement, you know, the air raids and the bomb shelters. And she sat, you know, and everyone had to go to the bomb shelters. Or if you were in school, you had to go under your desk because the atomic bomb would come. So anyway, she said, no, this is ridiculous. And she just sat there in the middle of New York City. And when everyone else was running into the bomb shelters, she said, no. She said, no. And she was arrested multiple times. But always advocating for those who were with less. Lot to do. Let's hear from our last caller, Arthur. Arthur, you have a couple of minutes.
I'll give you 30 seconds. I'll wrap it up. First, it's an honor to follow Stevie Ray Vaughan, the great Stevie Ray Vaughan. It's great to follow him up. That's a joke.
Yes, I
and,
know.
And but here's the concept. Direct action is what you were talking about. Direct action, that word you might want to use is immediacy. Immediacy means you need to act now, not tomorrow.
Hmm.
So direct action, immediacy. Thanks. That's all we got.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Thank you all of you who have been callers and participants about who we are and what we're doing, and reminding us that there is so much we can do. Direct action, and that can take many forms. Earlier caller reminded us of the culture and what we can do through our cultures. There are things we all can do, but we all must do it because we think it's not only the best thing to do, but the thing is the right thing to do. Dorothy Day once said, the greatest challenge of the day is how to bring about a revolution of the heart. A revolution has to start with each one of us. So how do we begin that revolution? It begins with us. It begins within our hearts. It begins in our community. You have been listening to More Talk Radio, but before you even think about turning off your radio or going on with the rest of your day, let me remind you that we are in the midst of our year-end campaign, Catalog of Connection, and to support, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 to become a monthly sustaining member today. Help us reach our fundraising goal of $75,000. I'm Cecil Prescott. Thank you for your support. Be well and continue to do what you can to create a better world. Take care.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations of programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the